Serious TV Drama Podcast. I'm Scott, and joining me once again this week, well, you can put the blame on MAME, boys, but you can't blame me for bringing Jamie on to talk about them boys. Hey, JJK, how you doing?
Hey, Scott. I'm doing well. Ready to get into this.
I wonder how many people will actually know the reference, the song. They probably won't. For all those who didn't get that reference, that's an old Rita Hayworth song from the 40s. Put the blame on MAME, boys. Put the blame on MAME. Anyway. has nothing to do with this episode. Anyway, we are going to be talking about the latest episode of The Boys, and that would be Glorious Five-Year Plan. By the way, meant to ask you this before we started recording, so I'm going to start right off being ignorant. Do they actually mention the phrase, a glorious five-year plan, in this episode, and I just plain missed it?
If they did, we would be two people that have missed it. So okay. I didn't catch it either.
Okay, I'm feeling really bad about that because it's titled Glorious Five-Year Plan. I can guess what it means. I mean, especially when you use the word glorious outside of our mutual friend John Sterling, who loves the word glorious. I hope he listens to this podcast. I'll tell him to listen to the podcast because I'll tell him I name dropped him. that has a very Russian kind of sound to it. So I'm wondering if it's has some connection to what happens in Russia. Or maybe I'll do some internet sleuthing after the podcast and look up what it actually meant. So right off the bat, podcast is already in the shitter. So anyway, let's get to how we do things around here. Yeah, you know what? It doesn't matter because I still listen to other podcasts about other shows and we're still better than them, so fuck it, don't care. Let's start off the episode with, wow, that was one of my favorite openings to anything ever. The solid gold opening. Being someone who, I'm sure at least some of our listeners are of an age where we remember, where we remember Solid Gold. And I remember I would watch it even though I would get angry because they were clearly almost always lip syncing on Solid Gold.
Yes, yes.
Because it'd be like, but the guitars have no wires. They didn't have like battery power that could do a guitar back in like 1981. Or if they did, they didn't do it on Solid Gold.
You zero chance of feedback. That's what that was for. Yeah.
And
the air guitar extraordinaire.
Oh my gosh. How many times did I remember watching Hall & Oates on on Solid Gold? It was always, and the best part was when they were doing a song that would fade. And there was one like, hey, if you didn't realize that they were lip syncing before, you're going to know at the end when the song is going. And you know, they just got to stop and you know, the lights just go down.
I'll be like, oh my well, life. And you gotta love that they're, you know, they played on the Blondie song, and it was great. It was a great opening.
Soldier Boy doing a cover of Rapture.
Yeah,
amazing.
You know, it's just one of those songs, right? It's like Blondie. Okay, Deborah Harry gets away with it, but could anyone else like?
Well, it's
you know, it's but the Soldier Boy, he gave it his all. Well,
many consider Rapture being one of the early rap songs. I mean, it's got rap in the title even. And I do remember seeing Debbie Harry on Solid Gold. I don't remember Blondie was on specifically, though they might have been, but I do remember her singing The Tide Is High on Solid Gold. Which not one of my favorite Blondie songs, but it's stuck in my memory. All I know is that when those opening minutes, and they've been having fun this season where they do something of this nature, some oddity in the opening of each of these episodes, I've noticed. But at that point, I was already like, I don't care what else happens in this episode. I'm just happy with this.
It was so great. You could have ended it there and been like, best episode so far.
And then you go, you have that, which is just abnormally funny, and then you realize that, you know, Mother's Milk is actually watching this clip, and you see that he's having memories of his dad, and I think he's holding on to the back of a chair, and he's firmly gripping it, and I'm kind of surprised they didn't go forward with the obvious and have him just, like, you know, break the top of the chair or something, because he was so upset or angry. But I just like that we're still continuing the mystery of just what it was that Soldier Boy did that apparently resulted in the death of his dad. So we're waiting for it. We know we're going to get it eventually. We're just waiting for it. And right. Part of me is wondering if the reason that we haven't seen it yet is maybe what Mother's Milk believes is the situation isn't actually what happened. That's what I'm sort of starting to think at this point. Not that I'm trying to defend Soldier Boy, but maybe there's something more to it than what he thinks.
Oh yeah. Clearly a possibility. Yeah, I like the zoom in on the clenching, and I don't know what we're gonna see, but clearly it sucked for him.
Jeez. Oh, you know, it's interesting that Mother's Milk is not a quote unquote superhero of any kind. He's one of the few people that isn't taking on any abilities. But once you hear like his dad died by something, it's like, oh, sounds like an origin story again, because usually yep. origin stories involve killing someone's parent or parents, you know,
yep.
i.e. like every other character ever. But speaking of characters that are screwed up, we switched over to like Huey and Butcher at that point. And I remember thinking, oh, it's so nice to see that the relationship between Huey and Butcher is so based on mutual respect and trust. And no, it's not. It's based on Butcher threatening Huey.
Yep, this is how we do things in this relationship.
So this is all about, you know, don't tell the others about him with the V and revealing that he killed Gunpowder while he was on V. Yeah, this is the Butcher that we know. I'm not going to say it's the Butcher we know and love, because I don't know if we really love Butcher or not, but we certainly know him. And it's interesting just to think about the episode in this way, because we've got this scene between Huey and Butcher pretty early on. It's one of the very first scenes of the episode. And then it's almost bookending the episode between them later on, where they're having the whole conversation where Huey actually wants to do the V and all that stuff and what ends up happening after that. And there's an interesting contrast and shift in what happens there. I mean, I guess we can talk about it more in a linear fashion when we get there. But I do think that's probably one of the more significant things about the episode overall. Not just in terms of plot, but in terms of where they're taking a character. And by that, I mean Huey's character more so than Butcher. So we see where Butcher's character is right now.
Yeah, and I will say that as the story progresses, it looks like what I was kind of thinking was going to be the direction they were going to take Butcher with this. It's transferred over.
Yes, yes, yes. Right. But speaking of people who are bonkers with powers, it's Homelander who was on the, I finally made a note of the name of the show that he's showing up on. It's Cameron Coleman, which you think I'd remember all the alliteration, but anyway, so I can stop calling it the fake Tucker Carlson show. But speaking of which, or it could have almost had more of a Hannity feel to it, quite frankly, because Homelander is there and he's totally peddling his conspiracy theories about all those so-called attacks on him in the mainstream media.
Yep.
And the more he talks, and the certain things he says about the people in power in charge, it's very close, chillingly close even, if I want to go to that extreme, to how we've heard certain people target certain groups, shall we say, in real life over the years. I mean, he didn't...
Yeah, some very proud people.
Yes. And, you know, I'm not going to say it has anything to do with that a certain group that maybe Homelander mentioned on a rooftop recently, but you betcha. Anyway, so, see, I can say that because I'm, you know, Jew. So, anyway, also, let's let me switch gears here as we vroom through this one. I needed to, I love when I feel the need to do this. I felt I needed to clarify a point that I think I totally muddied on our previous podcast. And that's with Stan Edgar. And I think I made it sound a little bit more confusing than I intended to. I just didn't articulate it very well when we were talking about that he didn't actually, quote-unquote, adopt Nadia or Victoria, which is what her name is now, or he just, but he took her in, or they gave it to, you know what, I got bogged down in a detail that, which at the end of the day probably didn't really matter. He clearly thinks of her as his daughter, and thus he thinks of Zoe as his granddaughter.
Yeah, and, like a surrogacy.
And what's interesting, and what I will give the writers and people behind the show so much credit for, when I'm watching this early scene between Stan Edgar and Newman and the whole thing, and that's where you really get established the bond between them and the paternal thing, whatever. And I was thinking, and that's, we're talking about the scene where he's telling her that she needs to give Homeland like a little slap on his wrist,
sure,
to keep him in line, whatever. Now, I had a thought during this scene, which about 40 minutes later was proven to be nonsensical. And I was like, okay, writers, smarter than Scott, which they should be, you know, much like most people should be. I was feeling at this point, oh, are they setting us up so that we see Edgar actually having no problem sacrificing one or both of them at some point later on, just showing what kind of bastard he actually really is?
Right.
And, of course, that's not actually what happens. It turns out to be the other way around.
Flipperoo.
Which I was, like, very impressed by that. So, but, you know, it's kind of fun, though, because the two of us have spent so much time watching Giancarlo on Better Call Saul, you know, from the Breaking Bad days as well. And we've gotten so used to that character. And we mentioned last time around, we've also seen him on various other things, like he's the bad guy in The Mandalorian and whatever. But it's interesting when we see these different shadings here, and you realize, and it's nice to see because you realize, oh, Stan, the similarities between Stan Edgar and Gus Fring are men that are typically always feel like they're in control. It's very unusual for them not to be. And there's always a sense of calmness with the way they proceed. They rarely, if ever, show any sort of sign of weakness by being anxious or whatever, which is what we talked about with Better Call Saul with Gus, where it was like this past season on that show is the closest we've seen that character to being a bit more frazzled. I mean, of course, his version of frazzled would be my version of resting calm. You know? Yeah, right.
This is my resting heart rate, guys.
But here, not that I needed to distinguish further between Gus Fring and Stan Edgar, but the plausibility that he actually does care about her and thus her, the girl who would be his granddaughter, which I am buying at this point, at least, you know, for the time being, is something that I just don't feel we would see with Gus Fring. I think the moment that his partner was executed next to him poolside years ago, burnt out whatever part of Gus Fring could have that kind of feeling about another person. I think that squished.
Yeah, him. I think that's fair. I mean, and even when we're having this scene where they're having this conversation and he's kind of like helping direct her to this whole idea of throwing Homeland out there and what the plan is going forward. There's a few moments where his control, like when you see him talking to Homelander or anyone in the Seven, where he's always very controlled and, you know, he's in command of the room and the situation, like he lets that down when he's talking to Nadia, and you can kind of see the real person and the relationship there.
Right.
And you definitely do not get that kind of dictation or emotion in pretty much any of his other character work that we really that he's done in the last, you know, say 5 to 6 years.
Right. The character, I mean, although there are other parts he's played that have featured, you know, more relationship related emotions that we just either are not recalling those roles or haven't right. seen them. Mm-hmm. But the ones that the marquee ones that he's done, which are like the marquee shows, like A Better Call Saul, like A Mandalorian.
Yep.
Those are major features of those characters that they are, you know, and thus why they are the villains that they are. Not that you can't be a villain and also have that emotional capacity. We've seen that in characters right. as well. It's just not been a function of the ones that he's played. But now with Sam Edgar, we do see this, at least we see this side of him. Because otherwise, yeah. I mean, he's a guy who doesn't lose his cool when he's talking crap to somebody who can just, you know, look at him the wrong way with an eye laser and remove him from existence.
Absolutely. And it shows him, you know, even more credit to his craft and his skill, because he's, you know, when you catch him in interviews and so on, when he's doing press or whatever, he is a very like bubbly, talkative, goofy, easy flowing kind of personality. It is so different listening to him just speak on behalf of himself in comparison to his character work, because he just brings so much intensity with him. So it's almost jarring at first when you hear him in interviews, because he's just so laid back. But like I said, it really right. pushes that the skill level and the craft that he's, you know, the passion that he has that he's bringing forward with his work.
The if there was one, oh, it's probably more than one link between like the three villain like characters he plays, they are all very measured and deliberate.
Yes.
In how they act and in how they speak.
Yep.
And people just can't, just normal regular people like Giancarlo Esposito does not actually speak that way.
Right.
So yeah, you're right. Even when you watch like a little minute and a half, you know, web clip thing, you know, Giancarlo Esposito talking about Better Call Saul, you realize, oh, look, he says more in this 90 seconds than he usually ever does. The words are at a certain pace that I'm not used to. And, it's tick, tick, tick. All right, let's move on. We'll get back. We'll be talking about him again soon enough. But bouncing through the episode, we are up to the scene. When Frenchie, and I'm going to just keep calling him Frenchie as opposed to Serge, it brings Butcher to see little Nina. And there's this weird and interesting power dynamic between Butcher and little Nina. And there's even a point, even the way the camera kind of captures it, it's as if Frenchie is like the little wayward child in between them.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Mom and dad are like signing the divorce papers, who's getting custody.
Right. And it was kind of like, well, you used to be my child, but now you took him over. And that yeah. Very, that, although I'm not sure many people use, you know, strap-ons with their children. This show, I'm skipping ahead. I'm just here for a second. This show is in love with strap-ons this season.
It's very dong centric.
It's extremely. Anyway, so it was funny. So I'm watching the scene, and you have that. At least I had that moment. Thought it's like, wait, is there kind of a weird little flirty possible sex thing going on between Butcher and Nina?
Yeah, I kind of caught some innuendo or undertone. Like, yep. I got it too.
I thought for a minute, like, wait, are they going to go there? If they did it off camera and they didn't tell us, but that was the impression I was getting during the scene.
Well, and it's okay, if you can have like a throwback to where we got to see like Homelander with Homelander, that's kind of what this was reminding me of. It's like you're there, you know, like she's there, him. they can see like they're like that, whatever that like thing is that drives their crew to doing what they do on their behalf, that control
there.
There's something, that power there, they're really exchanging that, but it's almost a little bit, you know,
oh, they're
egocentric. Right.
They're both mega alphas.
Yes.
There is no question who's in charge.
Right.
And they both proceed, you know, kind of steamrolling over anyone else as far as, because what they say, what they believe is what they say. Because she's in charge of this little kind of drug mob, whatever you want to call it, operation. Obviously, everyone kind of kowtows to her. And him with the boys, even though it may be less clear cut, he's still the guy that they have to all defer to, or at least that's how he sees himself in way they go about things.
Yep, absolutely.
So, next. All right. Gotta talk. One of these scenes in the episode is the next scene, which is when Homelander interrupts that conversation between... I don't know why I keep calling her Starlight and I never call her Annie. I don't know why I don't use her code name.
I'm okay with it because we, like, 99.99% of the time, she is in Starlight mode as far as uniform and makeup. Yeah. And
She mostly is in uniform so far. She's rarely out, you know, except for when they're in bed and stuff.
Right.
All right. So when Homelander interrupts that conversation, and it's mainly the scene, when the scene comes between him and Huey, who even stands up to him at least for a moment there. Again, knowing full well the guy can, you know, crush
yes.
him like that. And I kept thinking, oh my God, Anthony Starr. Not that he wasn't good the first two seasons.
Oh my God,
he's had a lot. In fact, he had a lot of great moments the first two seasons. But he's so good now in this scene and in a couple later scenes too, but this scene specifically. And because Huey had always been the one that we identify with as we watched the first two seasons, right? Still to some degree this season, even though, as we said in our previous podcast, a lot of the focus seems to be shifting more, much like they were doing late in the second season, is shifting more over to Butcher. But Huey is still us.
Yep.
And so the frustration one can feel is palpable. And if anyone ever dealt with any sort of bullying situation, either for themselves or for other friends, or maybe if you have kids who have dealt with it, whatever, but more if you dealt with it personally, you're feeling it right now. And, you know, I remember when I was a kid, I was like, you know, had to be like the late 70s. It was the days back where we wore shirts that said Brooklyn across the middle. It was a big thing. It was a big thing back then. Don't know why. And this one kid, I constantly would get into fights with him. Never won. Never. I don't even know, because he was like the king of teasing me. And by teasing, it was nastier than that, but I won't get into the details of that. And I always kind of like bull charged him, whatever. But he had a couple years on me, and I wasn't much of a fighter, except when I fought dirty, whatever. And I always, I don't think I ever even came close to winning. Wasn't, you know, I got better years later, not with him, but other people, and I got into fights occasionally. But then, and because eventually I was just getting so frustrated, and because then it'll gang up on me. Wow, maybe I just had an epiphany about something. Anyway, so.
That's going to be $200. It's been a good hour.
that's going to be a conversation later this week. So I'm feeling Huey here with Homelander. And.
Yeah. And just that tremor, you know, that tremor in his jaw and, you know, his eyes are, you can almost see him like holding back the urge to cry. Like the frustration is so much, you know, like you're talking about when you run into a bully, the last thing you want a bully to do is see how frustrated they have you. And it's so hard to like hold back tears when you're that upset, but holy crap. Like, and listen, I got to give props on this because it probably was one of my favorite Homelander moments when he walked in and he just grabbed his cast and signed his name across that cast. Like, I own you now. You know, the way that he can do these things that seem on the outside seems like he's like a catering to a fan type of thing. But there's just this really deep menacing spirit underneath it. It's just... this character, and I hate him, but like, I just love watching him in every scene.
Right. I mean, I'm not going to say he's eating up the scenery, because I'm not going to say he's overacting in any way, but he's Mm-mm. just been completely, totally compelling viewing. Again, not that he wasn't something worth watching in the first two seasons, but now this, to me at least, it just feels there's just an added little bit of electricity. Or maybe it's because it's just the focus has really come onto him. It's like, no, I mean, not that he wasn't the villain before, but now I really feel like, no, he is really the villain now.
Yes,
I mean,
yes.
And until we establish what the deal is with Soldier Boy, it's Homelander. Even though I don't think that's what they're going to do with Soldier Boy. We'll talk about that later. And there's actually something, you know what, I'm going to save that for later, too, in case I decide to go off on a rant on somebody. So, haven't decided yet. So, we can switch to, we'll switch to the A's. We got the A-Train talking with Ashley, and that's when he brings up the whole Blue Hawk situation. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's going to give A-Train credit or props or whatever for even bringing it up to show that he's at least making an effort, except we go right from that to the commercial for the A-Train turbo drink thing. Oh my God.
It is. Oh my God.
It is so beautifully offensive in all the right ways. And I kept thinking, The people who will actually be genuinely offended by this, you're the reason why things don't work.
This is why we can't have nice things.
if you don't get what they're doing here, and you just,
oh my God,
you're like the people who, I won't watch Blazing Saddles because it's racist. It's like, no, you're missing the point.
You're missing was just, talk about solid gold.
Oh, look at that.
That's what we had here.
She shoots, she scores. Yeah, oh my God. When the riot police are cracking it open. And they're just dancing to, oh my God.
Oh Lord.
It was, it's just, wow. And I love that because it directly follows the conversation he's having about Blue Hawk and about what he's been doing to, black men and people in that. And then going right from that to this is like going, wow.
Mm-hmm.
Do you not see the overt and extreme hypocrisy of what you've just done? You couldn't be more of a literal sellout than A-Train. Ever. The fact that they're even acting like they like his outfit now, that even should be a fucking clue. Oh,
yes.
A-Train. But you still
what are going to do with you, kid?
Yeah. But you're still not redeemed because you're a bastard. So, and boy, do we know that.
Your girlfriend smashing bastard.
Right. So, we do get this little bit of the boys, the team boarding a jet from Little Nina. I just, the only reason I'm even mentioning as I scoot through the episode is I just like the reference to Potendra on Entourage. Because I'm one of those people who I think I watched it till the end. I don't remember. But it's one of those, I hate this show. And I'm continuing to watch. And, like, I hated it more than, like, say, The Walking Dead or something. Because at least I could rationalize the fact that I keep watching The Walking Dead because I just want to see how it ends. I watched it until my trade paperbacks ran out, and I'm just curious. I just don't talk about it. You know, it's not as abysmal as it had been for previous seasons, but still not good. Entourage was like, oh no, I hate every single character on the show. And I don't believe any character on the show. And the whole Mark Wahlberg connection makes me hate the show even more. And I even hate the song in the beginning and the credits and whatever. And the fact that they even made a movie about this makes me angry. It's like, oh my God. You know what? Maybe I didn't see how it ended, because I don't remember how it ended. So maybe I did finally wean myself off it. But to me, it's like the ultimate insult. Potential entourage. That's just the way I view it. So say it, Scott. All right, I'll stop talking about that. So you and I, we were talking about how we haven't seen much on Queen Maeve
so yes. far.
So
had an inkling we would see her on this week.
Yeah, and even though it is just really one scene, I like the scene because it really gave us. I mean, I think we already are starting to have formed a pretty good picture of who Queen Maeve really is.
And
compared to pretty much anyone else, at least any other member of the Seven, she clearly has regrets and is kind of, you know, split, maybe not even split down the middle, because she's actively trying to have Homelander erased from existence and whatever. And
yeah.
And unless they're going to pull a fast one, it's not so that she can suddenly take charge. It's just, I think she's trying to do approximate the right thing. Watch, she ends up being in charge.
She's lost everything. You know, we watched her be a part of everything, kind of be in the Starlight position that Starlight finds herself in now, where she's just like, it's just easier to go along with until I can find a way to solve this. And then we watched how it cost her everything. And now she's been, you know, she's allowing the media and the public to believe that, you know, she's a sad, sorry mess who's on a bender, and she's allowing the public to think so poorly of her just in order to like train and keep herself vigilant in a way to be able to take down this establishment. I mean, that's like, that is badass.
Oh, absolutely. It's fascinating that she doesn't, and also to the degree that she doesn't, at this point, she doesn't even care if she lives or dies, as long as she's able to take them down, especially and specifically Homelander down, you know, with her, which is what's disturbing Starlight in her reacting to her.
But I think she's really on to the reality of what this means for the world. You know, it's not just about vengeance. It's not just about I've got to get my digs in because I was robbed. She knows what this is going to turn into. And she is literally doing this and willing to sacrifice herself. And I hate to say for the greater good, because that's just blah, but she knows the world actually needs a hero, and she's doing everything she can to be a hero, not just get paid like a hero.
Yeah. I mean, I feel that I think at this point she knows that I think she knows that she's not going to be that person, because she can't be.
Right.
Because she didn't stand up when she needed to. Hence that
she missed her chance, but she knows that she can, without her, there's less chance, and she's going to sacrifice. She's willing to sacrifice herself to allowed to happen what needs to happen.
Right.
She can hold him back when she says so. You know, she could hold him back, or, you know, get, I don't remember exactly how she worded it, but like literally basically just a defense for a moment for the opportunity to happen.
Right. I think she feels that by her literally sacrificing herself, meaning she knows she will die, is the closest she can also come to being redeemed for what she's either done or allowed to happen in the past, like what happened on that flight.
Because she's
on that video too, you know, and she doesn't even save the one, you know, like the girl, whatever. So she's, I mean, obviously he's the one who was, you know, quote unquote in charge, but she's culpable also.
But much like most bullies who survive in the world, they don't act alone. They have a circle of people that allow them to act out and do the bullshit that they do to the world and other people. And in order to really dismantle a bully, sometimes it takes the getting rid of the circle that protects the bully. And she was a part of that. And at least she is at the point of redemption, at least far enough in her redemption arc that she realizes her part to play.
Right. I know. I saw Stand By Me. Anyway, so... All right, so let me zip around the episode a little bit more. Russia. You know what? I didn't know. Talk about being ignorant. I'm so used to other people being the ignorance, but I'm ignorant here. I didn't know there could be so many interesting graffiti-style murals in a place like Russia.
I am so glad you brought that up, because I have been searching, trying to find which artists have been that were featured in this, doing this tag work. I am very interested, and if any of the viewers do have that knowledge, please by on Twitter or email or whatever, and let us know, because I am intrigued. It was, God, that was so cool. I freeze framed like every single shot in that drive.
A couple of them are really impressive, but I just kept thinking, like, wait, do they have stuff like that there? I didn't know such forms of expression would be okay. But
well, I'm going to tell you one thing about that I do know as an artist, as someone very interested in art. They are a very, very skilled people at any sort of artistry. It is a serious endeavor. There is not, you know, somebody who's just like I'm an artist for a hobby. You know, it's all or nothing. And it just some amazing, amazing work comes out of that country.
Right. No, I totally buy that. Okay. So since we're in Russia, we have Butcher. He's kind of exerting his power over both Frenchie and Kamiko here. And then we get into what I would view as, it's one of those fuzzy ethical areas for the characters and really the members of this specific team. Because the way I look at it, at this point, none of their slates are clean when it comes to, murder. Because bear in mind, just because someone's got abilities, they're still human. And if you kill them, still murder. So now, in this specific situation, which isn't about killing someone with abilities, I'm not saying that Frenchie and Kamiko are wrong to object to doing what they're, what the mission is going to entail here.
Sure.
You know, my feeling is I'm just going to point out it's not black and white. You know, it's always a gray area. For not just, and at this point, not just members of this team, everyone on the show. The show lives in a gray area of as far as morals and ethics are concerned here.
It certainly does.
Now, before we continue with that, and because I am going through this, as you might have noticed from your own notes, I'm pretty much going through the episode, scene by scene, so there I'm kind of staying in a kind of a, as I said earlier, a linear fashion. There's a scene between Starlight and Supersonic.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
And I really, at least at this point in time, because I hadn't finished the episode yet, I really kind of and almost unexpectedly loved this scene. It was the best take we had gotten on this guy's actual personality.
Yep.
And the fact that he kind of does that little joking and screwing with her is very different than, say, the way Homelander does it. Although, can we say now, this is the fourth episode, right? I don't remember the previous two seasons as far as this specific, I'm not going to call it a trope, gag, I'll say, is concerned. That's a running thing this season. That people are screwing with people. It's like, I'm totally fucking with you. I'm totally kidding you. Whatever. Because yes. I think three or four different characters have done that at some point. It's a weird kind of thing that they keep doing here.
Well, before they would do it, it would show up occasionally, but mostly what they were doing before was they were throwing that gag at the viewer.
Right.
Because
right.
We'd have these scenes with Homelander wiping out a crowd or whatever, and it was like, I'm just fucking with you.
Yeah, I mean, the show is should be called The Boys, and in parentheses, we're totally fucking with you.
That'd be appropriate.
And that leads to the scene or sequence, because the next scene and what that leads to after that. Why I watch the show. It's the meeting of the seven. I know, you thought I was talking about a different scene. We're not up to that yet. Okay, number one, the taco bowls. the fact that they get away with a joke, which is on one hand works within the context of the show, showing the way, just the way Homelander thinks of and is treating this new addition to the team. So we it's working on that level. And then there's a little bit of subtext here. there's a couple levels of subtext here, but I'm talking about the one that pertains to have nothing to do with the boys, just what's gone on in the world or maybe this country in previous years. One can imagine certain leaders might have done something very similar without even realizing that it was kind of offensive. Can't imagine who I could be.
Oh, yeah, a little bit. And, yep.
You've got all these little things happening. And then you've got, you know, I love the little detail, like, I'm glad to see that Noir, like, I love that I just said, I'm glad to see, because I was so worried, that Noir is apparently out of the hospital, and he's doodling. Did you catch that? He's, like, doodling, like, cartoon characters.
Yes.
I didn't pause to take a close look at them. Perhaps I should have. I'm assuming you did. I didn't ask.
I did not, no.
But I just love that that's what he's doing. Although now that we got that little bit of backstory from that flashback, which is technically right now the most we know about Noir outside of what was done in that animated thing, which I can't believe I forgot to bring that up in our first Boys podcast back. That weird animated collection of shorts that the Amazon Prime put out. And you, I think even you at one point asked me about it, if it was worth watching. Is it called Diabolical or something like that? I can't remember.
It always pops up like right after the new Boys episode drops. Like that's the first thing it'll reel over to.
Okay. I can't, give me 30 seconds here. I can't remember if it's either 6 or 7 stories. I don't remember how many there are. Honestly, as far as the series is concerned, only the last one is of any, should really be of any interest to anybody as far as what goes on in the show. Because we get an interesting little bit of backstory that involves Homelander and Black Noir. It kind of fills in a blank that we didn't know before, which is kind of interesting. The rest of them, look, If you want to watch them all, be my guest. I'm not saying they're horrible. I just think they're like, they're okay. They're nothing. There's nothing great. They got some interesting voices on it, but it's, and some of them are kind of more hyper violent than others, and one involves a lot of fecal matter. the character's powers are literally over shit. So it's like, oh, okay, that's something. If you're going to watch it at all, watch the last one. If you don't watch it's okay. Let me put it this way. It's no Invincible. it's not even What If. So it's at this meeting, A-Train brings up the Blue Hawk situation again. So he's trying again. He's trying, even though that commercial kind of, well, you know. And oh my God, of all people to help shoot it down, it's the Deep.
I don't know about you, but when he was sitting there and he was eating, did he have like a taco salad?
Yeah.
When he's sitting there eating that, the way that he was like, just, it was so funny because he's just kind of like giggling a little bit and just like snarking, you know, like, and he's putting this food and it just, you flash back to poor Timothy. And it just like the complete opposite, you know, like feeling and expressions. And it's just like, he's almost gleeful. Like so happy that he's putting like food in his mouth that he's not related to.
and bear in mind when they have these meetings, because they're not, because a lot of this is just for show and it's this business environment. There's people all around on the border, standing up near the table, including the Deep's wife.
Yes.
So, there's texting going on between them.
Yep, she's totally sending them the lines. And
she's totally getting turned on by the whole situation and doing all this. Because, yeah, he pretty much helps put the kibosh on the whole thing.
That girl is freaky deaky. And I am just going to say, like, I have a sneaking suspicion. I don't know if you've thought this. Sneaking suspicion that at some point in time, her and Homelander are going to have a meetup. Like, there's just, that's where this is headed. Like, there's no way. There's no way that does not happen.
Yeah, I could see that happening, depending how much
I mean, not that it's like a pivotal, cares. Like, thing I'm waiting for, but, like, she's going to throw herself at him. I mean, it's just, something's going to, she's just, she kind of creeps me out. Well, just creeps me out.
If I was going to make a prediction along those lines, I would say I could see him having his way, and then maybe, you know, his, when he finishes it, he erupts through the back of her head or something like that. I get the feeling she'll end up dead afterwards.
Yep. So. Yep. Like some, yeah. Cause there's some of that happens like in the comic. So I'm assuming that is a possibility.
And again, there's an episode coming up in a couple of weeks called Herogasm. So we'll just leave it there. So, dun, 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 dun. I am not saying that happens in that scene. I'm not saying that at all. So don't
we just that. Know
but something's gonna that happen.
If there's a place to go, they will go there.
There's a chasm.
There's a chasm.
It's coming.
There might be heroes involved.
There's a There's a chasm before the chasm. Anyway, after the meeting, that's when Ashley is giving him news about the presser that Newman's going to have later on, that we saw San Edgar kind of pushing her to do. And that's when we get the line from Homelander, this time around, where he says, "Is your idiot brain getting fucked by stupid?" By the way, I don't know why I like that line so much, and, you know,
because it is fantastic.
And for anyone who ends up clicking on this podcast via our link on Facebook, you'll notice, because this is one of the few times I actually wrote the description ahead of time, because I said, I'm going to find a way to work that into the description without having to say certain words. And I did. You'll see. All right. So, but let me continue with why I love this whole sequence of scenes here. Because after the meeting, it's not just that, which is that great line. It's what happens in the hallway between the Deep and A-Train. Mm. The two of them, they have the argument, obviously stemming from the Deep kind of blowing up his whole idea, whatever. And then them just, you know, ripping each other. And then they end up having a fight. And it's like the most punk-ass fight imaginable for two people who are, you know, supposed to be superheroes. I mean, if you recall, for those of you who listen to the Breaking Bad podcast, I often would make fun of the early Jesse and Walter fights on Breaking Bad. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you something, they had better fights than these two super stoops over here. And then when Homelander walks over and he only helps the Deep up, and he says to A-Train, he should just rest his useless fucking legs. And I'm going, oh my god, Homelander is like always so beyond on this fucking season. It's so good. But I just love the idea of it because it's also two of the more fringe players. I mean, yes, it's the two characters that are goofing on Aquaman and Flash fighting with each other. I just enjoyed it. I had a lot of fun with that. But that leads to that elevator moment. And although when I originally wrote this note, I wrote the note as I watched the episode. I didn't know I would actually nail it that quickly. Because I said in my note here, am I the only one yelling at the TV for Supersonic to keep your goddamn mouth shut?
Because what if he hears you?
I wouldn't. Number one, you have a character with super hearing. Number two, I would not trust A-Train with any plan. No. Well, yeah.
No, not at all.
Well, at least we see.
But that also shows, I think that sets up a really important part of showing us Starlight's cleverness, her ability to navigate these waters and still protect herself, because he, like her, just they just kind of like genuinely want to help. And he, you know, he's talking to him like a man, like a friend, like a man. Like he's trying to keep him afloat emotionally a little bit, be a friend for him in a tough time, but also kind of give him some hope. You know, as we find out later, that was detrimental. it was a bad choice, but he still sees the group in the Seven. He still sees them as the public has been trained to see them, mm-hmm. you know, right. as the good guys, as the heroes.
There's still a level of naivete with him.
Yeah.
Starlight's only taken the blinders off for him as far as Homelander is concerned.
Yep.
She might have failed to mention, like, oh, by the way, the rest of them are pretty bad too. I think she kind of said something like that, but she didn't. I don't think she made it clear.
No. She needed to point blank. She needed to be like, these mofos are psychotic and deranged, and like, do not trust them. Yeah. Just trust yourself.
She should have been like, basically, like, all right, that guy, he killed my boyfriend's ex girlfriend, and didn't give a fuck. That guy, well, pretty much kind of raped me. That yeah. guy is just yep. like, just murders people,
girlfriend
just in general.
Killer, mouth raper, egotistical, yeah. psycho, serial murderer.
It's lovely.
There's not a good one in the bunch. Yeah, she really should have defined those lines.
So we can blame her. Good. So
damn,
there's a. So we do get this, as we head back to Rush, we do get this nice little scene between Butcher and Mother's Milk. Is his name Marvin? Is that what his actual name is? It's Marvin, I think, isn't it? I feel funny calling him Mother's Milk all the time, that's all.
It, yeah.
I think it's Mother.
MM. MM works.
Let's do MM.
Like, we hear MM occasionally. Like, we'll go with that.
Like Martian Manhunter. The whole conversation, the whole thing about being a complete asshole or not.
Yeah.
And that's when Butcher kind of reveals how he was first chosen to be added to the team. Oh, by the way, he refers to her as the Colonel. So, yes.
Yep. You're right.
She is called the Colonel at different times. But the whole point was that they felt that he was kind of a natural born leader. And, you know, regardless of whatever Butcher would do at the top, he would be the guy, the one who would not only help keep the team in line, but also be looking out for the team as well, which is what yes. we see him doing. Which is what makes certain revelations later on in the episode just a little bit more tragic than we might have realized they were.
So just a wee bit.
So I got to get to this. So, look, I am a huge fan of the song Poison. By Belle Biv DeVoe.
Yes, I am so glad you're bringing this up.
Now you know. you're stepping on my lawn there. But I can't help but say, it seemed a little odd to have that playing when Kimiko comes out of the van, because she has neither a big butt nor a smile. I had to say it.
I think it was perfectly chosen. It was just such a great way to tell us, like we didn't already kind of know, but like that Frenchie is just super ooh la la, you know, seeing her dressed up, you know, it's another side of her, like woo-woo.
Well, speaking of other sides of her,
as she stumbles on her heels, and hello, I'm. Part of the reason why I was glad you brought this up is because how many times have I talked about Maeve walking through rubble and all of these like female superheroes that are like wearing these impossible shoes to walk on a flat surface, and they're walking through, like, we get all of these scenes of them walking through bodies and slippery, bloody floors and rubble. It's like there's no way in the world, like a normal human, you have to be a hero to be able to walk in heels through that crap. And here we have this just freaking assassin just walk out, look super hot, and the first thing she does is flip on that heel. And I loved it. It cracked me up. It's like, there it is. That is how we know she's got powers, but she's still a freaking normal person.
Well, generally, metahumans have this an increased state of equilibrium that helps support them.
Yes.
So that characters like Wonder Woman can have like ridiculous heels and have no problem walking.
They can do the impossible.
It's fine. It means nothing to them. Okay, so we're at the point where we're going to get a succession of scenes that are jaw dropping for very different reasons. First, the one we're up to, and I believe it's been referred to out there in the public in the social media and whatnot. The death by dildo scene. Now, I said they really are loving the strap-ons in this season, but all the okay, that was something. And
yeah, yeah. I mean, we had our in the theme of the seven.
Yeah, that was amazing. It was like, you know, they're like McDonald's or Pez, but each one.
Yeah.
get the Starliner one, and the. You know, I was like, I wanted to old freeze. Like, I wonder if they have like old vintage ones. Like, is there like a lamplighter one in there? Maybe. I bet there like, was. Is there a translucent one that's like clear? That had to be.
It signals like further investigation into the like the history of this craftsmanship. I love to, after what we were talking about last week, when you were talking about in the comics and kind of giving us like a little bit more about some of the, you know, when they're going into Russia, but some of Nina's backstory or what her character is. I thought that as soon as I saw that, I kind of chuckled. It's just like, that's a nice tie-in to
right,
what
you're talking about. Right, right. Yeah, I thought I had the same thoughts. Like, oh, it's kind of links to what I was saying about Nina in a weird way. Just didn't, yep. Didn't see that one coming, so to speak.
Neither did he.
Also, a nice reminder. I also appreciated the reminder because we hadn't. Again, there's been a big gap between seasons, and we haven't seen her in action, so to speak,
yes.
Up until this point. It's not just the fact of what kind of fighter she is. It's her healing abilities, you know, the Wolverine-like aspect of her character.
Yep.
That even that she could even, or Deadpool, I guess some people might go to as well, has that ability as well, where she can be like basically even shot through the head and then heal from it. So I kind of enjoyed that little very superheroic moment there, even though she's trying to calm them down, you know. And I kept thinking like, no, take stuff. It's yours. You know.
Yeah. Yeah.
For some reason, my mind went to to Breaking Bad again when they kill everyone at the Don Eladio's place, but there's all those dancing girls who were still there, and I kept thinking, no, you can go steal stuff, take stuff, go,
just take shit and go, man. This is your lucky day.
No, it's a well choreographed scene because we haven't gotten nearly as many of those as we thought we might have at this point in the season. Get to see her in action, what she can do, and you know what? Even though she didn't want to do this, she didn't want to be used solely as a weapon, and understandably so.
Mm-hmm.
If there is any, there should be some consolation taken in the fact, like, okay, at least you're killing people who aren't very good people.
Yeah.
So there's that. You know, could take a little solace in that.
Maybe make a code. Maybe you'd feel better if there was a code.
Yeah, and then then you could be a lumberjack after. All right, so
that's what they do. It's the logical thing.
That's what they do. It's the progression. You only have to be a Monty Python fan for it. So I throw these jokes out for like there's like two people I know will appreciate them on who listen to the podcast. One of them actually even comments online. So. We go from that. So that's one jaw dropper. By the way, did anyone get one shoved in there? Anyway. So then we go to the the next one is when, we're going to have that press conference with the congresswoman, you know, Victoria/Nadia/whatever, Newman. We just call her Newman because
we do
the Seinfeld joke all the time. That we can stop, because I've noticed on this podcast already, you know, I was calling her Vicky or Victoria, then Nadia, you called her Nadia. It's like, okay, we got to go with one name. It's not like Starlight/Annie. you can get away with it, like Superman or
Clark. Yeah, I'm all for Newman. That's how I have it written in my notes at this point.
Well, if there ever, probably this season, this would be the first major Newman moment. Where she unexpectedly stabs Stan Edgar right in the back.
Oh, boy.
So I'm going to tell you, I'm going to ask y'all out there. You know, let me see y'all raise your hands. Everyone who thought she was going to do this, raise your hand. No, none of you did.
Shh. Nope.
Don't even lie. Didn't. Don't lie to me. Don't lie to you and don't lie to yourself because that's even worse. Did not. Anyone who said, unless you read a comic or something, shut up. You didn't see that coming. It's a shocking twist.
You knew nothing.
And I was just like, and just when he's being led away and whatever, and you realize, and then you're wondering what was it that led to this, and we find out later on. And that's a questionable decision that we'll get into momentarily. But speaking of maybe not telling people things they should don't, whatever. There's that moment earlier when they're watching. It's during this. They're watching the press conference at the headquarters, I guess we'll call it.
Yep.
And you see them all exchanging looks between each other. And, you know, and it looks like even A-Train's part of that. And you're like, oh, maybe I was wrong. Maybe it was okay to try. Maybe he finally knows this is the one way that he can make change happen and he can get this asshole out of their lives, whatever. Maybe A-Train is going to do the right thing after all. Yeah. We're not going to know that. But we're not there yet. What else happens here? I guess immediately after that happens, it looks like Ashley is kind of, you know, assuming more control there. She has that scene with the Tucker Carlson wannabe dude, whose name I mentioned earlier. Now I've already forgotten it. I know it's CC, Cameron something. But the noteworthy thing about the scene is two things, if it's noteworthy. Number one, the fact that she repeats the line that Homelander used on her to kind of show that this is her way of being in charge or taking control. And the fact that they bring up the strap-on thing. And I'm like, that was when I'm like, really? Another strap-on? Wait, what is going on with this show this season? Now the new title will be The Boys. it's more than just strap-ons, but not really. So,
there was a few.
All right, so we'll skip through. We do get a nice little sweet scene between Kimiko and Frenchie about planning what their future might be after. The thing about scenes like that, you're like, okay, I'm going to say.
You're like, that's
not going to happen. Uh-oh. Not going to happen. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry, Kimiko. I'm sorry, Frenchie or Serge, whatever your name is. This is not going to happen. One of you might end up in Marseille. I don't think both of you will. And then we go from there. Oh, then we find out the story. I guess, is it here that we find out? Oh, no, we find out later. We see Homelander visiting Newman. And that's where we realize that she had struck a deal with Homelander.
Yes.
And he gives her, you know, a bag. And then we're totally like, well, wait, what's in the bag? I'll skip ahead just to get that scene out of the way.
Sure.
And we discover that what he had gotten her was some of that Compound V to give to her daughter. So that her daughter would also, I guess, have powers and thus, quote unquote, be safe. Or at least in Newman's mind, she would be safe. Now, as I'm watching this, and I already know it's one of those things I'm writing down the note and it's like, I already know the answer to this. Why am I writing down this note? But I'm an honest guy. I'll just keep going with what I was thinking at the time. I had been under the impression that if someone had V powers and then they had progeny, that their kids would have powers. But now I'm realizing, no, wait, that's not true. That's not what the case has been. Because that's why Ryan is such a big deal.
Right.
Because Homelander is an actual product that was created in a lab from the start.
Yes.
And he's actually, I guess he's the first one that Ryan represents the first child.
Yeah. He's the first genetically right. born that way. Yeah.
So then I realized all that within 90 seconds of me writing a note. It's like, you know what? I'll keep it in my notes because it'll just be something just to reiterate on the podcast for anyone who might have forgotten, which probably is nobody, but. Anyway, but that's why, you know, Homelander is such a big deal. So let me scroll back.
And I just to kind of dip back on that scene really quick too.
Yeah.
I thought it was really important for us to see that she is giving this to her because she's wanting her to be safe, or, you know, what the full extent of this is, we haven't seen yet, but just the agony. The agony that this girl was in, and the crying, and she was hurting, and like, I can't imagine as a parent, you know, like, does this paint Newman in even darker light because she's injecting this pain into her? Or is this a heroic act? Like, what was the purpose of us witnessing how awful this was for this girl? And then also keep that in mind when thinking about people like Starlight and what they grew up doing and dealing with as part of these giant experiments. So that I just wanted to touch on that because I thought that it really put an even darker undertone to the whole story of creating these soups.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Spot on, especially because we hadn't seen anything to indicate to us that if given an injection that it would have we thought, okay, there might be the initial reaction, but we see this is something that's prolonged, that it might go on for who knows how long. She might have to hold her for the next, maybe for hours, who knows? It does seem extremely, extremely torturous. Sorry if I seem a little distracted here, but a little friend has returned and I'm...
Battle of the bug.
Yeah, there's a very strange, I don't know how to describe it because it doesn't look like a fly, but it can fly, and it was on the wall in front of me just before we started recording, and I missed it, and I was creeping up because it's kind of scary looking, and now it just returned, but it's literally walking on, I say the word literally way too much, it's walking along the edge of a frame of something that's on the wall, so I can't really, it's literally on the corner, on the edge of it. So it would almost be impossible to really square something up to hit it. So, and also, I don't want to damage the framed object, which is actually, you know, priceless. So
we know how to solve this. You just need a Ziploc bag half full of cocaine.
All right, shut up.
Just grab that. You'll be fine. Just catch him.
And I mean, I'm not even joking now. It's perched on the corner. Oh, it just started moving again. Okay. It had been perched on the corner of the frame. I swear to God, it's looking at me. Oh, God. Oh, now it's moving. Now I went back to it. Oh, my God. It's like one of those murder locusts from the Jurassic Park. It's only slightly smaller.
Talk about genetically modified.
It's like the size of my pinky tip. Oh, now it's, now it's coming closer. All right. I might have to stop this podcast. All right, so it's getting closer. The moment I see it on the wall, I don't even have anything to hit it with. I'm gonna try to smash my iPhone again. Oh, now it's closer to me. All right, everyone's like listening to me, like, what the hell are we listening to now? Oh, now it's on the back of the frame. Once it gets on the wall, okay, I'm gonna use my dart case. Okay, so if it gets on the wall, if you hear a big clatter. And if you hear a scream after that, means I missed, and then I'm probably going to die.
It's coming after
I'm probably
Scott.
Going. It's probably going to wait till I sleep, go in through my nostril, or somewhere even worse.
It's going to lay 1,000 yes. Mystery insect eggs.
Oh, I don't even know where it is now. Oh, there it is. Oh, now it's on the other corner, staring at me again. Oh, Jesus Christ. Okay, all right. Concentrate on notes. Okay. Okay. So Butcher. That's where we'll go. Butcher with the V-24 again.
Yep.
And that's kind of what I was talking about, bookending that scene from earlier in the... I keep staring at the fly, sorry. It's not a fly. I don't know what the fuck it is. It's really... Imagine, like, you know the thing that Batman drove in the Dark Knight movie, the tumbler? It looks like the tumbler, but apparently it flies. It's really weird.
Interesting.
It's very straight. It's very angular. So they're in the bathroom. I don't know if I just made this podcast much better or much worse. I can't decide.
Only time will tell.
You know what? It'll depend what happens with that creature. It'll be better for the podcast if it does, like, fly right in my face, and then you will hear me scream like the big. You'd be like, you know, I'm actually recording the video of this. Someone's gonna want to see that. All right. So he's in the bathroom with the V-24, and that's when Huey shows up. And Huey is desperate. And he's making these pleas that he wants to try some as well. And it's fueled by what we talked about earlier, about how his feelings about being bullied and the anger. And just so he has something, even if he's not going to actually take on Homelander himself, at least he'll be infused with a sort of a power that he won't feel so powerless like he has been this whole time. And keep in mind, he's also been beating himself up tremendously because he feels he was duped by the whole Newman situation. And yes, he blames himself for that, which, you know, he might be right about that. The bug is now in the middle of the frame. But it's unfortunate here for the character, because this is something he would never have done before.
Yes.
And the fact that he's been pushed in this direction, or he's pushing himself in this direction, however you want to look at it, that's a change. That's going down a different road for this character. And it's tragic in a different way than Butcher taking the drug. Because Butcher obviously is anti-soups and all that. And again, with good reason. But he's a very ends justify the means type of person.
Right.
And the fact that he can do something where he will have a certain type of power, and he rationalizes it by it's only for 24 hours, although we see it tends to linger. And we also see there may actually be an addictive aspect to it, which we had already known from before with A-Train and so on.
Right.
And so even this 24-hour version of it looks like it has a similar effect. But that seems to be part of the character flaw, the personality flaws that Butcher had from the get-go. This is different for Huey, because this is something he never would have even imagined doing up until this point.
Right.
So it's kind of, there's something kind of, if you take out the fun aspect, oh, he's going to have powers, he'll do something, whatever. It's like, it's tragic. It's a tragic turn for his character.
It absolutely is, because it takes something that's in his character and his moral guidelines that keep him being us in the story. You know, but he's for so long suffered this idea of there's got to be a better way, and having a complete lack of power from the very first time that his very first scene in the very first episode on, he has been fighting the lack of power to solve and fix the situation. Solved that situation right well.
Speaking of situation. Oh, by the way, I apologize because I know I had to stand up. Hopefully, well, I'm not worried about it. Things were covered. I don't know. I apologize.
Today was a pants day.
Today was not a pants day. But their boxer briefs, everything was covered. Hopefully, I don't know. Anyway, if you heard these two sounds in the background, that was me smashing my dart case against the wall, crushing the little bastard. And the first one looked like, didn't crush him enough. It's like, wait, you might still be alive. I got to double tap you, motherfucker. So,
The killer never dies.
Oh yeah,
you got to go twice. It's a rule. It's a rule. Everyone knows.
Just much like in darts, if you're playing, you know, when you're playing the best, always double tap. Always
there
double
it is. Tap. And there so it is.
Now I wrapped up. I wiped it off the wall with a tissue and crushing it again. So it's the third time. All right. I feel good now. I feel power. See, I didn't need V for any of that. All right. So okay. Oh. All right.
Huey's heading in a rough way.
Right. But we'll get to that. And obviously we know where that leads, but we'll get to that in a moment. But I want to get to Stan Edgar scene with Homelander here, because that kind of goes along with what we were saying about Stan Edgar, that he is, up until this point, other than maybe, I don't know, maybe Queen Maeve herself or something, maybe. No one else can get away with talking to Homelander this way. Mm-mm. And it shows the kind of fucking ironclad, gigantic balls on this man that he doesn't even worry about it, you know. Of course, he doesn't see what's going to happen. That's already happened. But I love his little takedown of him, because Homelander has been more and more building himself up as, you know, basically a god among men, whatever, the way he talks about himself, right, and everything. Yep. And, you know, even when he made the Jesus analogy in that previous episode and everything else. But when he says, "You are not a god, just bad product." Oh, by the way.
What a burn.
And of course, when you hear Giancarlo Esposito refer to anything, you refer to product.
Yep. Yep.
I was like, "Ooh, I think I could hear, little Gus Fring in that, that word."
You bet.
Oh, my Lord. So, we got the mission, because that's the big semi caper of it all. The ridiculous thing about as they're getting onto the base and whatever, and he keeps encountering the different Russian soldiers, and for whatever reason he has to keep referencing the titles of all these anti-Russian movies from the '80s. You know, it's like, remember Red Dawn, motherfucker. Remember Rocky IV, motherfucker. Like, yeah. Come on. Stop it. And I started thinking of other ones as well. It's like, what about, anyway. One of the other major highlights of the episode, a fucking hamster on V.
Oh my God. It's like they walked into a fucking Pokemon lab. It was, like, what's going on?
It's when they like them and Frenchie's kind of signaling to it. And like, hey, hey, hey. And I was like, oh, something's going to happen. It's not going to be pretty. I mean, they didn't get that crazy, but when it just starts bouncing off the walls of the cave. You know, I was like, oh, please use this. Please let this be the Chekhov gun in this scene. And it certainly was. and did any of us think, like, hey, maybe that could be the weapon that they use? Homelander versus Hamster. Come on. But they both begin with H and end in R, you know? Anyway, so let's cut to the chase with this scene pretty quickly. Look, all right, number one, we all knew the Butcher is going to be using his powers during this mission, so we knew what was going to happen here, right?
Yeah.
So we may or may not have suspected that Huey, despite Butcher telling him no in that scene, that one way or another he was going to get himself a hold of some of that V. I'm not going to say that was necessarily predictable, but I kind of thought it was going to happen.
Right.
It was more of a matter of what was it going to be? Was it going to be a vision power? Was it going to be something else? Apparently, he had a super speed like ability kind of a thing. Although he ran out of his clothes, I was a little. I'm not sure why that.
We
had
can
to
see
happen.
Your dick.
Well, I was like, and he should have said, "Hey, that's a thing this season." Dick, dick, dick,
dongs,
dick, dick.
No. Dongs everywhere. There's dongs.
I mean, Dr. Manhattan would be right at home watching this show. It is. Blue dick everything and everywhere. However, now, and I'm pretty sure, I'll also say, I'm pretty sure, I know I did, and I'm no genius. Well, I am in some cases, but not for the show. We all knew they were gonna find Soldier Boy. I mean, we see that huge device, which looks like something like, oh, the minute I saw it, it's like, that thing's gonna crack open. There's going to be steam, because you know what? There is always steam.
Obviously.
Always. Always. And we're going to see Soldier Boy lying there or standing there, whatever. You know, whatever. It was very Captain America-ish, whatever. So I think all those things that happen, which are great fun to watch, they're all kind of like, okay, yeah, we knew that was going to happen. Yep, yep, yep. Check, check, check. It's what happens after Soldier Boy stumbles out of that encasement, whatever.
Hmm.
That's when it starts to be a little less predictable.
Yep.
The fact that he almost seemingly kills Kimiko, or at least, you know, temporarily kill it, whatever. And the fact that Huey seems to be kind of high on his V usage.
Yeah, yeah. A little bit buzzed, right?
Again, disturbing. again, worrisome, because if he's reacting like that, it's not just the abilities, but it's having that kind of an effect on him. Mm-hmm. We've mentioned it has we've seen they've established from the get-go that this has addictive properties. Because I wonder, like, is that where we're going with Huey now, and how's he going to be getting hold of stuff, whatever. So those would be the things I thought were not necessarily predictable that came out of that shit show, as they say.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And just the, you know, the with everything happening in the back of that van, you know, and Butcher kind of trying to put together, formulate a plan, mentioning, you know, the notes that he had in his head, and MM just being like, man, like, would you just fucking look at the situation we're in? Like, what, would you not see what's happening? That was definitely a down note for our team of boys.
Right. It should be mentioned, since we had mentioned earlier when Butcher was having that scene with MM and talking about why he was on the team, that the note that struck, for anyone who wasn't really picking up on the fact this is not a good thing, this is a tragic note that's happening. Oh, note, I said note twice there. It's his reaction to Huey having taken the V.
Yep.
And what he says to him, that he expected better from him. This is not something that, you know, he could see why, he could see this one doing it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
His opinion of Butcher has already lowered to that point. He thought Huey was better than this. Especially after everything he had already gone through himself. Because obviously the thing that these characters share with each other is they all have experienced tragedy of loved ones who were taken from them by, at the hands or abilities or whatever you want to say of one of these soups. Either it be what happened to Huey's girlfriend, what happened to MM's dad, or what happened, mm-hmm. or the whole situation with Butcher and his wife, and what had happened before and what happened more recently. But it also, that would have, that bond between them, which is what, why they were able to comprise this group, should also have been what would keep them from ever wanting to use, V.
Yeah.
Now, I do know that in the comics, if I'm not mistaken, and if I'm remembering, because I feel like I said this when we covered season two, I think there's a certain point where they all have taken V. Including him, including Mother's Milk, that they've taken in the past, or they take it in the present, whatever. So that does happen. So I think this is the way that they're doing it on the show. It's like, okay, it's Butcher. Oh, now it's Butcher and Huey, who are, you know, the two polar opposites, but, you know, they both would be the least characters you'd think would be the least likely to do it. And now they both have done it. They both succumbed to it for, you know, for different reasons.
Well, so, yeah, and I think there's also this the idea that everybody that's on this team has had to, in their quest or in their experience in life, in their quest moving forward, they have all had to really blur the lines on their morality. And do things that they are ashamed of. And Huey was the, you know, he's kind of the pure soul. He is the hope that there could be a good guy.
Right.
And he's dashing that hope. And that shows, like, the momentum that he really brought to the group. That idea of being a good guy.
Right. I mean, while there are characters who are more, say, positive than, say, a Butcher, like Frenchie to a certain degree, or Mother's Milk to a certain degree. But Huey was supposed to be the one that we also related to the most. Because he was thrust into this whole thing out of nowhere, much like a viewer watching it for the first time. We don't have that back experience or the backstory that these characters have had over the years, and, you know, and have also been involved in very violent situations, missions, whatever, whether it be everything that Frenchie did over the years or what MM did over the years as well. Huey wasn't that guy. Huey was a guy who worked, you know, just had a regular 9-to-5 job like the rest of us, or whatever hours he worked. Did he work at a video store? I can't remember. Anyway. All right. So we're hurtling towards the end of the episode, and I mentioned that was a shit show. There's a worse shit show in store for Homelander and Starlight. Well, it's in store for Starlight because Homelander takes her on a quick little flight just to, you know, give her
the most beautiful view in the city.
Amazing view. And that amazing view turns out to be the mangled corpse of Supersonic, which made me go back to my notes like, should I erase this? Because obviously, A-Train, you fucking bastard.
Yep.
And I got more angry because, like, wait a minute. Now I'm never going to know what Supersonic's powers were. I spent all that time predicting what his power is going to be. Now he's dead. Never going to see it. Thanks a lot, A-Train, bastard.
Jerk. So. Look what you did, you little jerk.
So, we then have the realization, or Starlight has the realization, that there's really, she's screwed. There's nothing she can do.
She's trapped.
And Homelander just keeps, no pun intended, because it doesn't really pertain to this situation right now. Anyway, he keeps trumping them over and over. Every time we think there's a way that they might actually at least gain some advantage on him.
Yep.
He's able to get around it, which is something that Homelander was not as capable of doing in the past. It seemed like he would find out things almost by accident before, whereas now he's more calculated about what he's doing. It's very interesting what he's doing, and he makes her repeat the phrase that if she steps out of line at everything. That pile of blood and bone in the corner. It's not going to be Supersonic next time. It's going to be Huey, and he makes her repeat that'll be Huey. It's interesting. I watched between the boys and I won't spoil it for you because I know you're not up to it yet. But so it's not really a spoiler. But the finale of Barry both involve characters making someone repeat phrases over and over. Which is weird because it's an acting technique. It's like the Meisner kind of thing. And I remember thinking like, oh, okay, that's interesting. I'm going to do that in The Boys now. That's interesting. And that's the end of the episode. It's a great ending to, I thought this was a really, really strong episode. Really establishing, some really rather dark turns for certain characters, which at least we do expect that to happen on the show. And also throwing some monkey wrenches into the plotting of where we thought the show might go. Just in any way sidelining Stan Edgar was kind of a surprise to me. I didn't foresee that.
Yeah, that definitely shifted some of the paths I was kind of creating in my head. That was definitely a blindside. I didn't see it coming, and I'm glad that we didn't get any real hints towards it.
Yeah, absolutely there were not. I mean, quite frankly, I thought they were actually going to go in an opposite direction there. So it's interesting to see where they're going to build from this. How far they're going to go with the powers thing. What's the deal with Soldier Boy? Because he just kind of leaves. Does Soldier Boy end up being an additional menace to deal with? Does he become the opposite? Does he somehow get allied with them despite the fact that he is supposedly responsible for the death of MM's dad and such? I feel that we're going to be getting into those stories momentarily because they're going to be trying to tie all this stuff together, and we've only got a few episodes to go. Okay, then. If you enjoyed this podcast, guess what? You'll enjoy hanging out on our Facebook page as well. It's the Serious TV Drama Podcast page. Like the page, you can talk about TV series like The Boys and Better Call Saul and so many others. Where can you find us? Well, you already found us if you're listening to us, but in the future, you can find us in places like Spotify, like Amazon Music and Apple Podcasts. And, you know, you can even review us in some of these places. We're still doing pretty well with that. Better than most other podcasts, which is really kind of shocking. I used to whine about, like, well, we got like 50 ratings. Other people, they got like 20 something. Fuck y'all. Anyway, but you can find all of our podcasts, which is like 347 at this point, at stvdpodcast.podbean.com. That's Podbean, P-O-D-B-E-A-N. You know, it'll be a nice little app on your iPhone or something.
Yeah, I was going to say, put that app on your phone. Keep it on the front page.
I actually even once listened to part of our podcast on the phone. It was really nice because we had the picture there. It looks all nice. Whatever. You can follow us on Instagram. Our Instagram handle there is SeriousTVDrama as one word. It would be nice if we got a few more follows, but it's okay. Better still, you can also follow us on Twitter because we do say things other than just the sending out the links from time to time. Our handle on Twitter is... God, what is it? Oh, yeah. It's at STVD Podcast. It's STVD as in Serious TV Drama. We will be back next week to cover the 5th episode of Season 3. I did not look to see if they had revealed the title. I'm going to assume they didn't because they didn't reveal the title of this episode until sometime that day, which kind of annoyed me.
Yeah, you always look for the title.
Yeah, because I'm also I'm posting threads for it. Like I try to do like at least a day in advance, and I was like, I guess I just leave it at blank.
Lock and key, and they're keeping it under lock and key.
But I know what the title of the next one is going to be. But anyway, Jamie, thank you so much for joining me and also bearing with me, whether it be rambly rants or me trying to hunt down creepy insects in my house
It is always fun to join you on an apartment safari. I'm so glad that I got to be a witness to your victory.
All right, as long as that's the only thing you were witness to. All right.
you're clear.
And finally, I realized I was making fun of Entourage earlier, but I'll say right now, apparently according to Frenchie, I would say that this podcast does have something in common with Entourage. Much like Entourage, it is but for the stupid and the damned. Good night, everybody.